Now here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And good evening. Tonight, we're going to get involved into what has been billed by my guest as the ultimate human experience. The interaction between mankind and spiritual beings of divine encounters, as recorded in scriptures and ancient texts, provides a powerful drama that spans heaven and earth, involving worship and devotion, eternity and morality, love and sex, jealousy and murder. But how much of this is based on myth, misinterpretation, or historical and archaeological proof? Well, Zechariah Sitchin is going to be joining me in a few minutes tonight to talk about his new book, Divine Encounters, a continuation of his well-known Earth Chronicles series. Now, real quick, the book that he's coming out with, Divine Encounters, it's a story of Earthlings' encounters with his creator, and it's a record of encounters with UFOs and their occupants. So concludes Zechariah Sitchin, author of the just-published book Divine Encounters, published by Avon Books. In evidence, he shows ancient and prehistoric depictions that go back to the Ice Age and cave art. The new book is the seventh in a series that began with The 12th Planet in 1976. Combining biblical scholarship and linguistics with a thorough knowledge of the earliest civilizations, Sitchin has taken his readers on a journey that began some 450,000 years ago, when astronauts from a planet called Nibiru arrived on the Earth. The Sumerians, whose civilization blossomed out in Mesopotamia some 6,000 years ago, called the Anunnaki, those who from heaven to earth came. That's the translation of that term or word. The Bible, Sitchin wrote, called them Nephilim, those who have come down. Other nations in antiquity worshipped them as gods. Ancient texts written in cuneiform on clay tablets describe the Anunnaki as astronauts and aviators, and depict their varied aircraft and spacecraft. And Sitchin's new book offers both ancient texts and depictions in profusion. Such depictions, he suggests, were also included in what Cro-Magnon artists painted in the Ice Age caves of southern France and northern Spain. Pictorial records, photographs, if you will, of UFOs witnessed thousands as well as tens of thousands of years ago. Combining the latest scientific discoveries in space and planetary exploration, advances in biotechnology and archaeological findings with paralleling ancient data, Sitchin follows the story of man on Earth through the records of humanity's encounters with its creator. New scientific meaning is imparted to the ancient tales of Adam and Eve, the Garden of Eden, the Deluge, the Tower of Babel, a launch tower, Sitchin asserts. The theophany at Mount Sinai, he says, was the greatest ever UFO encounter when the 600,000 Israelites had seen the glory of the Lord come to rest upon the Holy Mount. Zechariah Sitchin was born in Russia and raised in Palestine, where he acquired a profound knowledge of modern and ancient Hebrew and of other ancient and modern languages of the Old Testament and of the history and archaeology of the Near East. He attended the London School of Economics and Political Science and graduated from the University of London, majoring in history. A leading journalist and editor in Israel, he now lives and writes in New York. He is a member of the Israel Exploration Society, the American Oriental Society, the Middle East Studies Association of North America, and the American Association for the Advancement of Science. In addition to numerous articles, studies, and lecture papers, Zechariah Sitchin has written the following books that have been published and republished in numerous editions and translated into 12 languages. Some of the books in his Earth Chronicles series is The 12th Planet, The Stairway to Heaven, The Wars of Gods and Men, The Lost Realms, and now this Divine Encounters book, which has just recently been published. It's my pleasure to welcome as my guest tonight the author, Zechariah Sitchin. Good evening, Zechariah.
Good evening, Mike.
Thank you for being on the program.
The person you just described is wonderful. I'd love to meet him.
So would I. I think we've got him on the air.
Well, let's find out.
Okay, all right. 1-800-836-2009, I'm sorry. 1-800-836-2009, that's our call-in toll-free number. Again, my guest is Zechariah Sitchin, and we're going to be talking about his new book, Divine Encounters. And Zechariah, the book, give us a bottom line real quick, a sketch of what this book details.
Well, in a way you just described the book, it really sums up the first or the prior six books it adds a lot of information based on the latest discoveries, including, for example, the discovery by ground or soil penetrating radar of a river that ran through Saudi Arabia, which is now a total dry desert, from the mountains there to the Persian Gulf. And I am suggesting, I hope convincingly in this new book, that it was one of the four rivers of paradise, and thus I identified the fourth river. The first two are the ones about which there's no doubt, the Tigris and Euphrates. And this is one of the pieces of evidence that I provide in this book for the veracity of the Bible. Now, in your in introducing your program, I heard that it has to do a lot with UFOs and the paranormal, etc. And sometimes when people ask me what they should read, what I recommend to read about UFOs, I say read the Bible. That's the best book on UFOs. And I'm trying to show, and you mentioned the cave art, that the so-called UFOs or flying machines or whatever, spacecraft, were already known and seen and witnessed by mankind 10 and 20 and 30,000 years ago. And it all leads to the existence of one more planet in our own solar system from which beings, intelligent beings, who look like us because they made us to look like them, as the Bible says, came here and eventually gave us knowledge and civilization. And to sum it all up in three or four words, it all shows that we are not alone in our own solar system.
Give me an example. You just mentioned the Bible. Give me a quick example before we go to our first break of what you're talking about in our Bible.
Well, the you mean the
UFO phenomenon? Connection. Yeah, the UFO connection.
Well, you mentioned in your introduction the sighting by 600,000 Israelites of a landing upon Mount Sinai. There are details about the prophet Elijah, who had an appointment, an actual appointment for a certain day and a certain time, to be taken aloft in what we would call a UFO today.
Fiery chariot, as I remember.
A fiery vehicle. And may I tell you, Mike, that about a year ago, in February of 1995, I have to remind myself that we are in 96. So about a year ago, a group of my friends accompanied me on a trip to the Middle East, and we went to the exact place from which the prophet Elijah was taken up to heaven.
On the river Kibar?
Well, it's on the other side of the river Jordan, where the Jordan enters the Dead Sea. And the reason we went there was because an archaeological mission under the auspices of the Vatican in the 1920s dug up there remains of very ancient structures upon which murals were found, and some of the murals depicted bulbous vehicles with eyes or with lights or with apertures, with extended legs, exactly the way people nowadays report UFO sightings. So we were really privileged to go there and see the place and stand where Elijah was taken up to heaven. So there's all these continuing instances, like Jacob's so-called night vision, when he saw divine beings coming, going up and down a ladder from a hovering craft, from which strong light emanated. So it goes on and on and on, and there are other instances mentioned.
Zechariah, hold that thought.
You want to stop for a commercial?
Okay. Yeah, hold that. And Zechariah, take us back now. These figures are astronomical, 460,000 years ago.
Right.
What happened?
Well, what happened was that according to the Sumerian text, by the way, the Sumerians are the people who are... credited with the first known high civilization that introduced almost 100 firsts that are considered essential to any high civilization, be it writing or metallurgy or the art of high-rise buildings, courts, priests, teachers, schools, art,
just a lot of different...
et cetera,
sure.
And this amazing civilization blossomed out almost 6,000 years ago. And I sometimes, just to impress on people what 6,000 years means, I say we are about 2,000 years from away from the time of Jesus, and Abraham was about 2,000 years before that, before Jesus, and to that add one more 2,000-year segment, and you now realize how far back
this
in
goes.
History, or almost prehistory, we are going. And when one wonders how could the Sumerians have such an advanced technology and knowledge, for example, they knew the complete solar system, including planets we have discovered only in the past 150 years. Pluto was discovered only 65, 66 years ago.
Now, I know that.
So they knew that. They listed all the planets. They described them and so on and so forth. If you could ask them, how could you know that without telescopes and microscopes, etc.? Their answer, which they wrote down because they also introduced writing, was those who came from heaven to earth, the Anunnaki, taught us. They were our teachers. They told us all that. And if you would ask them who were the Anunnaki, whom they depicted, by the way, they would say they came to earth from Nibiru. And if you would say, what is Nibiru? The answer is, it is one more planet in our own solar system.
Now, is this
the story, the first arrival, the first landing, does take us to almost 450,000 years ago.
Now, this planet Nibiru that you're talking about, Nibiru, or however you pronounce it.
I pronounce it Nibiru.
Nibiru?
No way of asking the Sumerians how they pronounced it, but I would say Nibiru.
Nibiru. This goes around every 3,600 years, and there's some talk
according to the Sumerians, mm-hmm. and if you trace human civilization advances from the Old Stone Age to the Middle Stone Age to the New Stone Age to the beginning of the Sumerian civilization, it is always in intervals of 3,600 years, as if those who came here from Nibiru, from the heavens, each time took a look at us and said, oh, okay, let's give them another dose of civilization.
Okay, now, let me figure this out here. If it goes around every 3,600, high civilization, according to the mainstream history and ancient history, I should say, mm-hmm. high civilization appeared, how many years ago from now, 5,000 years ago?
Well, it's acknowledged, without questioning, that the first known, and I keep stressing known, because according even to the Sumerians and the Bible, mm-hmm. there was an earlier civilization before the deluge, before the Great Flood.
Right.
But after that, after everything was wiped off the face of the earth, it goes back to about 6,000 years ago, which is give or take 4,000 BC.
Does that mean that at some point now in our history, or recent history, Nibiru would have been around again? Or is it coming now?
Well, it was definitely around. And, you know, Mike, it's been almost 20 years since my first book was published, The 12th Planet in 1976. And then there were the other books, 6, and now the latest, 7th. And there have been all along 3 questions which keep coming up, and which I always said, I can't answer yet, I need more research, I'm not ready, or whatever. And the 3 questions, not necessarily in order of importance, were, number one, who was Yahweh, who was the biblical God? The second was, where does Jesus fit into all that? And the third was the question of the return. When are they coming back? When is the planet coming back? And if I don't answer. They say, okay, so when was the last time? Now, the question of who was Yahweh is being answered in this book, Divine Encounters. The other two questions need more time, more research. So when was the last time? I'll do what politicians do. I'll say, excellent question. What's the next one?
Okay, well, the next one is we got to go to another break.
Saved by the bell.
Right. Well, welcome back, my guest, Zechariah Sitchin, author of Divine Encounters, A Guide to Visions, Angels, and Other Emissaries. Zechariah, I'm curious, Graham Hancock, are you familiar with his work, Fingerprints of the Gods?
Yes, I know him.
Okay.
We spent some time together.
Now, I've been very impressed with his work and his research, and it seems to me like these things are coming up, your work and his work, and there's others out there in the field that are saying that there is now archaeological, geological, historical proof that something big went down here on this earth many, many years ago, and that our history is all wrong. It sounds like he is pointing to the same kind of thing that you are. You call them Anunnaki and the Nephilim, or the way they're described in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Are these one and the same? I mean, in other words, are you seeing these in the Viracocha myths in Central and South America and some of the stuff in Egypt?
Absolutely, and some of my books deal specifically with, for example, the book The Lost Realms deals with the Americas, and I was fortunate to have some of my friends come with me on my expeditions to Peru and Mexico and so on. And we have seen with our own eyes the evidence for the contacts in prehistoric times between the so-called Old World and the New World that supposedly never contacted each other. And it's all one story, Mike. It's all one story. And when I started to research it, and the research for the very first book took some 30 years, I started with who were the biblical Nephilim and the myths of the Greeks and the others, and gradually I worked my way back, and it all starts with Sumerian. There is a text known as Enuma Elish, or in English called the Epic of Creation, which deals with those celestial events that affected the earth. There is the tale of how the deluge came to be, which was, according to my books, slipping off the continent of Antarctica. The ice cover slipped off and created a vast tidal wave. And the slippage occurred because of the proximity of Nibiru and its gravitational pull. So it's all the legends, the worldwide legends about the deluge and about one couple that was saved. And you can churn it and churn it and churn it, but it all goes back to the Sumerian records, which are the earliest.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Do you know what this word means, Peshmeten? I might not be pronouncing it correctly, but Peshmeten.
In what language is it supposed to be?
I'm not sure. We had a caller off the air that asked us to ask this to you.
Pesh?
It's a Sumer. It's apparently from Sumer.
Mm.
It doesn't ring a bell?
It doesn't ring a bell unless it's mispronounced or
it's probably mispronounced.
I don't know. I don't know. Well, can I, through you, tell people that they're welcome to write to me, like this caller.
Sure.
And maybe when I see it in writing, I'll know what he's asking.
Okay, we'll
my mailing address, may I tell it?
Well, wait till the end of the hour. I'll give you an opportunity to tell it at the end of the hour.
And he and others are welcome to write, and I answer all my mail.
Okay. All right, now, the thing is, according to some of the stuff that I have here from you, the what's going on Mars? How does all this tie into Mars and some of the stuff that Richard Hoagland, for example, is telling us about the face on Mars?
Yes,
there is. I will admit, I think his Mars research is pretty solid. What are we being? What's this pointing to?
Well, first of all, let me say that whoever's research, including mine, and evidence from the surface of Mars, is based on photographs taken by NASA, because neither I nor others have been to Mars or photographed it at close range. We are all relying on photographs taken by NASA spacecraft, you know, mostly in the 1970s. The most the famous or best-known one is the so-called FACE, and NASA continues to claim that it's not an artificial carving, but they say, well, if you go here, you go there, in South America, even in the United States, and you look at some mountain, and the wind and sand and whatever, the elements have eroded it, and it looks like the head of a lion or the face of a man, and they claim that's what happened on Mars. I'm more impressed as one trained in archaeology by the fact that there are other structures, and I give the photographs in my book, Genesis Revisited, that show structures with straight lines. And one of the first rules one studies in archaeology is that if you see a straight line, it's artificial, it's man-made, because there are no straight lines in nature. Everything meanders in nature. So there are structures, and I give the pictures, again, NASA photographs. So there's no doubt in my mind that something was there. Now, in the Sumerian text that actually describe the space voyage and give us a space map, which is in the British Museum, the space voyage from Nibiru to Earth, passing by seven planets, because to them Earth was the seventh planet. And if you come in from the outside in, then Pluto is the first, etc. Mars is the sixth, and Earth would be the seventh. So they described that Mars was a way station. And therefore, I have concluded in this book, Genesis Revisited, that based on the loss of the Soviet spacecraft in 1986, you know, Phobos 2, that somebody has reactivated an ancient space base on Mars. And I think that this explains much of the UFO phenomenon, and also hints at the answer to the question, when are they coming back?
Interesting. What are the Anunnaki? What was their purpose in creating mankind?
Very prosaic. They came to Earth, according to those ancient sources. They came to Earth in search of gold. Not for coins and not for jewelry, but because they needed gold, or rather gold particles, with which to protect the dwindling atmosphere and the dwindling internal heat on their own planet. And they tried to do it the easy way by extracting the gold from the waters of the Persian Gulf, because that's where they splashed down initially. And when it didn't work, they started to mine the gold in Southeast Africa, which in the Sumerian or Anunnaki language was called the Abzu. And after a while, there is a text called the Atrahasis text, that describes a mutiny when those few of them that were forced, astronauts forced to work in mines for survival purposes, said, no more, we just can't go on doing it. And then their chief scientist said, I have a solution. There is a being that already exists on Earth. All we have to do is put our mark on it, and then it will become a Lulu Amelu, a primitive worker for us. And there are very detailed texts, several of them, that describe the process that we nowadays would call genetic engineering, and the creation or bringing about of babies through test tubes. And they brought into being what the Bible calls the Adam, which literally translated means the earthling. And we were brought about in order to work for them.
Just to be slaves, essentially.
Well, not slaves, because slavery you know, especially in this country, has a connotation of putting people in chains and forcing them and starving them and beating them and whipping them, which was not the case at all, because no sooner that we started to multiply, that not only they gave us knowledge, and some of us chosen ones were taken up to the divine abode and given knowledge of astronomy, of mathematics, of medicine, etc. As the Bible tells us, and I devote a whole chapter to that, the so-called Nephilim, who are mentioned for the first time in the Bible in chapter 6 in connection with the story of the deluge, they even married the daughters of the Adam and had children by them.
Okay.
So we were workers. We were not slaves.
Okay. Zechariah Sitchin is my guest. We're talking about his book, Divine Encounters, and his publication, The Earth Chronicles series, comprises several books, many years of research, as he said, translating Sumerian documents and finding some really very strange things in our closet of history, if you will. And welcome back, Zechariah.
Good evening, Mike.
Okay, I've got a call. We're going to go right to the phones and take a call. We've got a Bill calling in from our affiliate KHTL in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good evening, Bill.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question for my guest, Zechariah Sitchin?
Well, I've studied the Bible a lot, and I'm curious to know if he has anything in his book about the book of Revelation, because it sounds to me like the very first description, the first few paragraphs in there describe, you know, John seeing this thing come down, and then he goes kind of into the ship, and he's surrounded by elders, and he's describing what sounds to me like a view screen and stuff, and I thought that perhaps the images that he was being shown were actually images on a view screen rather than a vision of God.
Any comment on that, Zechariah?
Well, as far as I could make out, the question wasn't, the sound wasn't too clear, but it has to do with references in the book of, or descriptions in the book of Revelations. Now, the book of Revelations is part of the New Testament, which is the story and the chapter, the events connected with Jesus. And as I mentioned earlier, this is still one of the things that I have not dealt with yet, and I will. But so when I refer to biblical events, they are by and large in the so-called Old Testament or Hebrew Bible. But I do towards the conclusion of the book Divine Encounters, I do quote from the book of Revelation what I thought is not just most appropriate but most revealing in the book of Revelation. So there is a connection.
Okay, I'm curious why it's not more, and thank you for your call, Bill, from Albuquerque there. I'm curious why there's not more of this in the Bible. When we read the Bible, we don't see a little bit more of this kind of an explanation rather than, you know, the one God, Yahweh, and,
yes,
you know, that type of thing.
Well, Mike, when you read the Bible, or when others to whom you have in mind when you say this, read the Bible, in what language do you read it?
Well, of course, you know, the English translations.
Okay, now, each translation is an interpretation. And recently, there have been a number of publications that took this or that verse or a few verses from any place in the Bible and reprinted the rendering in English, never mind the other languages, German, French, etc., but in English, the way these Hebrew verses were translated, and you would not recognize that they are translating from the same book. So you really have to read the Bible in its original Hebrew, and you have to accept what the Hebrew Bible says literally, and not through theological or other interpretive eyes or or sentiments.
What do we do with this thing about the idea that, for example, in the Bible, the
yes.
English translation of the Hebrew, which I guess a lot of scholars agree is fairly accurate, what do we do about this idea or the notion that God is angry over the idea that his people sought after relationships with celestial beings, and that this was a major problem for the Jews of the Old Testament?
Yeah, well, I actually deal with all that in this new book.
Okay.
One problem, Mike, I mean, you have to transport yourself to biblical times, let's say, after Abraham and after Moses, so we are 4,000 years ago, 3,500 years ago, and living in what we call the pagan world, but where the so-called gods, and luckily in English we can use a small g, so it's gods with a small g, all around them, the so-called leaders or pantheon of the Anunnaki, who were eventually worshipped, and here somebody comes and tells them it's wrong to worship them because they themselves are subject to a higher authority, and it's certainly wrong to worship their images, their statues,
right.
Because they're just crafted by some craftsman out of stone or wood or metal, and what you have to believe in is in a supreme God, actually universal God, not just of this earth, whom you cannot see and you cannot depict. Now, you are there 4,000 years ago. Everybody else has his gods. Everybody else sees them or sees how they look. And somebody says, oh, no, you have to believe in somebody, but I can't show him to you. That was the problem that the prophets had to struggle with, and I touch on that
of course, Christians,
in my book, and sure. Indeed, I think I have a chapter called Prophets of an Unseen God.
Of course, Christians now believe that Christ himself was the manifestation of God in the flesh.
Well, that's, that takes us to the messianic expectations, and
right.
As I said, I still have to deal with it, but it needs more research.
Okay.
Because before I'm trying to convince my readers, I myself have to be convinced.
Okay. And Zechariah, how can people write you if they want to get further information?
P.O. Box 577, New York, New York, 10185.
One more time.
P.O. Box 577, New York, New York, 10185.
What's the and thank you very much. But what's the real quick? What's the bottom line? Where are you going from here? Continued research, I take it.
Well, as I said, two more questions left. Very important question. One is, of course, historical, religious, theological, etc. And the other is one of general interest to all mankind, that's of the return, which links in a way with the previous one of the second coming or the return of the kingdom of heaven to earth. And you can word it any way you want, but it's the question of what will happen the next time.
Okay, very good. I want to thank you for being on the program, and good luck to you.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you very much. Zechariah Sitchin, again.